Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to write a checklist, part two. The questions this cast answers are, what's so hard about writing a checklist? How do I write a checklist? And what is it important to include in a checklist?
Now's the time for pause to ensure you're over-communicating with your directs, peers, boss, friends, even your family to alleviate misunderstandings. Communication is an area which we can all improve, especially during this challenging time of uncertainty. Why? Because you want to ensure that your delivery is affecting your desired result. If you've got a team of peers who may be customer-facing, both internally or externally, you may want to consider our virtual effective communicator training. All attendees receive a DISC behavioral assessment. We'll teach the team the underlying guidance, and afterward, each attendee will send their presenter the video practice clips. For an $11,000 fee, we'll work with up to 30 individuals in your organization. Contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com or check it out on our website, manager-tools.com/organizations.
Kate, we finished up last week with our document ready, our idea about our headings, knowing what we're going to use for bullets and indenting, and now we're ready to start writing. And the secret to this is write your checklist as you do the thing for which you need the checklist. That's why we told you to open the document and move it to one side of the computer so that you could do the process on the other side of your screen.
Yeah, it'll make your life so much easier. Another good way to do this is to screen record yourself doing the process and then do the checklist from the video. When you do that, you often see details that you don't see when you're actually doing the thing. Also, I found it's a lot easier to do the screen recording thing because actually, I don't know, it depends on how you're doing it, because I will say this, I have found that when I'm screen recording myself, I often say, oh, well, I got to go back. So also though, at least you could like type while the screen recording is going on. So that might be a pretty easy thing to do. Besides like Camtasia, are there other ways to screen record though?
Oh yeah. If you're on a Mac, you can use QuickTime. There's a bunch of browser apps that'll do it. I can't answer for Windows, but I imagine it's equally easy. Yeah.
Cool.
Screen recording's easy. I found this out because if you are selling your house and you have someone staging your house, they will take a picture of the room once they've finished it and then look at the picture to see if anything's out of place. Because if you've been in the room and you've been arranging things, your brain just says, okay, I know that thing is there. And you start to kind of be blind to it.
Yeah.
And so if you take a photo, you're looking at the photo and your brain says, okay, I'm looking at a photo, and then picks up all those details again. The same works with the screen recording of a process that you're doing. If you're watching, even if it's yourself, if you're watching someone do it, you see the detail that you wouldn't do normally.
Be so nice if there was a way to do that with writing, so I could see my own typos. That would be amazing.
Oh, wouldn't it?
Because that's my brain just like ignores my typos and tells me what I think I wrote. Okay, so we're writing.
So here's my trick for that. This is an added bonus. Go to the web and do what's it called? Text to speech. Doesn't matter which one you use. There's a whole bunch of them. You copy your text into a box and you press play, and a robot reads it. And then they're not too robotic. But when they read it, you can hear your mistakes because they stumble over the words.
Oh my gosh, that's so smart. Thank you.
I know. I write a lot. That's why.
That is so great, because I genuinely, after the third time, I'm not doing anything except reading the thing that I think that I wrote.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Okay, good. Okay, so we're writing a checklist. So it's a little different. So every task gets a bulleted line on the checklist. Don't try to write a short checklist. Don't do it. It's not helpful for anyone except you, saving time in this process. But since the purpose of writing a checklist is to exponentially increase the time saved throughout the group, and sometimes that group includes you, saving time now will only reduce the exponential impact of this checklist over the lifetime of the checklist. So don't do it. Exert your time now, pay attention now, focus now, and then that short checklist, which would have caused you pain, will not be there. You'll have a long, beautiful checklist, which will save everyone time, and you'll be creating joy for all humans.
That's true. And if you need to change something, it's much easier to go back and change one specific line that's very discrete. It's like this task,
yeah,
or this action, than it is if you've described something in a more general way. Then trying to change it is harder because sometimes the generality applies and sometimes it doesn't, and it's just easier.
Yeah.
So one note about your tasks, don't use and. Now, sometimes you do have to use and because, you know, like put down the knife and fork, they both go together. But a lot of the time we write things like sign the paper and file it. And the problem with that is signing it and filing it are two different things, right? And the next subtask after file it should be, this is where you file it. And that doesn't apply to signing it. And so if you have a bullet that says signing it, sign it and file it, and then underneath it says in the pink folder on the left, it's very confusing that signing it should have those details. So almost always when you have an and, you've got two tasks together, at least two. So break those into two different lines.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before when we talked about the work management system CAST. So we'll just quote it from there. Never write your tasks to have an and in them. The first few tasks on, like, for example, your work management sheet will be around entering header data. You'll notice that the example tasks like enter location data are easy. They're small. And you could have changed that to enter location data and customer name and company because we know that all three of those things will be done together. And we recommend against it for a lot of reasons. It's perfectly possible, though, that you'd fill in the location data and then get a text from your boss. You answer it, and before you know, an hour has gone by, and you've completely forgotten to do the other tasks that are combined in that and task. Keeping the task short and small helps account for the numerous distractions that we're all prone to.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, what would you do with that longer task if you have to find out the company name? Perhaps in your case, knowing whether the company is Peter Bridges and Sons LP or LLP is important, but you didn't get that information when you first started. So if you're waiting for that information, do you mark enter location and customer name and company done because you have it, but you haven't completed it? Or do you mark it not done because you've partially done it? And then when you come back to it, you think, did I do any of this? how do you remember which parts you've done and which you haven't? This is the same for the checklist. If you have that, if that were a task on our checklist, now it's like, how do I know whether or not to move on to the next bullet? Because there's three things here and I've done two of them. And when I come back, do I remember where I left off? Breaking tasks into really small things, yeah, makes your checklist longer, but it also makes things easier for everybody. And we talked a bit about the people who have to use this checklist's confidence, and small, easy actions give them confidence that they're doing the right thing, that they're getting there. If you have longer ones where they're not sure whether they've completed it or not, they'll start to doubt the checklist and then it's not helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, smaller tasks are better. They're easier. And you're making an assumption about how much of the information that they have or how much of that task is easy for them. And it could be not easy that time. And then, you know, if it's 5 or 10 minutes in between tasks because of the background work, again, you'll forget the part after the and. So we're making a lot of like simple recommendations here. The next simple one is each task starts with a verb. Always starting with a verb means that you'll always have a task that has something to do in it. Perhaps you could say send, add, confirm, upload, enter, write, estimate, calculate. What is it that you want to see being done in order to accomplish this task? That's the first thing that you start with. Using a verb will really help you with creating an item with a yes or no answer, which is another essential, right? It's kind of like a checkbox. Yes or no, is it done?
Sent or not sent. Added or not added, confirmed or not confirmed, uploaded or not. Yeah, if you don't have a verb, it's easier to have the answer be maybe or perhaps or sort of.
Right.
And that's not helpful for the person using it.
No, it stops them. They don't know if they can go on to the next task or not. So it causes it to be, I think, just kind of feel very start and stop.
It reminds me suddenly of those online things like filing your taxes? And it has a question and I'm like, I don't know that I know the answer. And then I press the help and I still don't understand. And I think, can I submit my taxes if I haven't answered that question? Or can I submit them if I answered it wrong? How much trouble am I going to be in? I don't know. And it's that kind of feeling that you want to avoid for people. You want to make it super, super clear.
Yeah, we're trying to make it easier. It's the whole point. So if you've used a lot of bullets and you started with a verb, you have no ands, the other great thing you can do is use annotated screenshots and descriptions. A novice checklister, someone who's making a checklist who's new to it will use screenshots to show the reader the screen they will see, and then sometimes even annotates them to show what they should do. And that's really not enough, we found. Screenshots are useless if they're not annotated, first of all. If I'm given a screenshot with no instructions, all I know is that I'm on the same page as the screenshot, and I have no idea where to take action.
I'm here in the kitchen. Now what?
Right. It would be like showing someone just a picture of the kitchen. And you're like, yes, I'm here.
I have my kitchen, your kitchen. They look the same. Now what?
Yeah. So you have to add arrows to the buttons that need to be clicked or text that needs to be read. If multiple steps happen on the page, you got to number the arrows or the text to be clear what the numbers relate to. Use step one, step two, checklist item one, checklist item two, so that the reader can match the annotations, the checklist, and the actions they're supposed to be taking. I flew recently and I had to have this letter. And in the form online where they tell you what has to be in the letter, obviously the person who writes the letter doesn't include them in the same order. So reading the letter, they're out of the order that they are, right? Like someone, you say like, oh, we need a letter that says these five things. And the person writes the letter. They don't put it in the same exact order as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I went in and annotated the letter. Like I just on the side, like one. And of course it was like 1, 5.
Write this first.
3, 2. You know, it's like completely out of order. At least though, the person who's looking at the requirements can say, okay, there's 5 requirements and there's 5 numbers on this page, right? So that they don't have to read the whole letter, because that's intense. And then it's not enough, because let's say number 2 is at the bottom, but number 3 is back up at the top. So you've got 1, 3, 2. Well, guess what? Then they have to read it 3 times, because they're only reading every time looking for the thing that they need at that moment. They can't hold that steps five, six, and seven are above steps 2 and 3 in their head. They can't. You gotta spell it out. It'd be great if the website matched the steps, but that's not how it works. That's not how websites work.
Never works that way. It's right. Never that convenient. And you asked about the screen recordings. I would do this in preview on a Mac, but the easiest way to do annotation of images I found is on a PowerPoint. So you import the photo, and then most people know how to put shapes on PowerPoints and text. So that's all you do. So if you don't have any other clue how to do that, use PowerPoint and then export it as a JPEG to wherever your checklist is. Make sure the text or numbers that you add matches the terminology on your checklist. So if you use entry screen on the checklist, don't have input screen on the screenshot, because people will get confused. Yes, entry and input is the same thing, but if it's not exactly the same, people won't be sure. I'm sure that's why I have so much problem with my taxes, because sometimes they say revenue and sometimes they say income. Are those two the same thing? They're money in my pocket, but I don't know if they're the same thing. So make things match. And again, for a high D like me or a high I, that level of detail is really irritating, but it'll save you in the long run.
Yeah, for sure. Make sure too that your readers can see your annotations. Use big red text, bigger, much bigger than a normal document, at least 18 points. Use a thick arrow. Put your annotations in the white spaces on the screenshot as much as you can. And if you can't, you can always put a white box behind the arrow. Decide how big you want your annotations to be and then double it. Because
this is the double it cost.
Right? Well, honestly, your brains don't process a lot of stuff as being visible. There's so many things. I mean, how many people really see at the bottom of websites when they scroll to the bottom, the little icons for social media? How often do you really notice? Because your brain has seen so many of these things so many times. It's just like, oh, that's there. Okay, cool. It skips it.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you, see, the person using your checklist, their brain tells them what it thinks they're looking for. You have to tell the brain exactly what they should be looking for. And if you're using two different words to describe it, like entry screen or input screen, or you're not using a very obvious indicator, their brain takes what you said, turns it into something else, and then tells them to look for that.
Yes.
No joke.
And then you get a phone call saying, where's this? And you're thinking, there isn't a this. Why are you even asking me?
What are you talking about? So your checklist is, this is hard to do, but you're leading people through a series of steps. And it's kind of like teaching a little bit in that, you know, they're learning a process and you're making that process clear. And your brain is doing the same thing. Your brain's doing things behind your back to make this process. The reason it's clear to you is because your brain knows 50 things that you don't remember that you know, and that your brain doesn't remember as being important.
Mm-hmm.
So your checklist still has to describe the page and the actions too. Remember the purpose of this. Not everyone will look at the checklist and be able to relate to what they're looking at. And the page could change. Oh gosh. If they're looking for what's signified by an arrow or a screenshot and it's no longer there, they will get stuck. They'd be like, it's not there anymore. If they have the additional help though of text on the checklist that says, press enter details button, and there isn't a button, but there is a link, then most people can kind of work out that the page has changed, but the instructions are the same. So you do need both the visual and the instructions. Also, because I found that, especially with visuals, they go by too quickly for me sometimes. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's the one thing about video. I always think, like, the video will be better. And then I have to rewind the video 50 times because it goes by too fast for me.
I was following a YouTube tutorial for painting at the weekend, and I was sitting in the conservatory with my dad, and he said, how many times are you going to tell her she's going too fast?
Right.
Like, I'm watching a video, and I'm like, no, wait, I haven't done that bit yet. But yeah,
it's tough to keep up because they already, again, their brain is doing stuff that it knows it's supposed to be doing next. So if you only give people the screenshot or even annotated, they won't know what to do. And your checklist should not encourage users to blindly follow instructions. It should contain enough context that they're developing an understanding of what they're doing so that they can solve problems themselves when things go wrong and that they can teach others. Again, you're the teacher here through this checklist. It's actually hoping to save you time because hopefully they'll stop calling and asking you how to do these 10 steps. But it can only save you time if it's actually helpful to them.
Heads up, we have just 10 signed copies of the Effective Manager book left, and we won't get more until next year. If you're thinking about getting one for yourself or as a gift for someone else, purchase it now before they're gone. So the next thing is use commentary to provide additional help. So you don't need to stick to like bland. It doesn't need to be sort of robotic instructions or only describe the exact thing. So you can help a lot with context by using the commentary, and you can use it in different ways. So you could use it to make people, to help people know that they're in the right place, make them worry less.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you could write, click the red button. Don't worry, the new screen takes at least a minute to appear. Because if I click the red button and I don't know, and the screen doesn't appear after 15 seconds, which is, you know, I think most people expect a website to load in like half a second or something ridiculous. If it took a minute, you'd have already turned your computer off and rebooted.
Yeah.
So that commentary is really important.
Yeah, it is. If they have a choice, you know, tell them about their choice and tell them, you know, you can do it now or you can wait, something like that. You can write the tracking number down now, or it'll be on the next screen too. You might even give them a hint. You could say, click the red button. I find it's a bit sticky, so give it a good whack.
Exactly. Or you can help them know that they did something right. Like, click the red button. If the machine beeps, you did it right.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of things that you can include that just help with all of the things that we're trying to do with this checklist. Helps them actually achieve what they're supposed to do, but it also helps give them confidence, helps teach them what they're doing. No wonder checklists are so complicated, because we're actually doing 15 different things with them. Maybe that's the problem. The other thing is just indent the commentary from the task to which it refers so that it shows it's not another action, it's just information. And you could like do it a different color or put it in brackets, but usually if you use kind of a bit more casual language, then people will know it's commentary versus task. But that depends a little bit on your audience.
Yeah, remember that commentary can be used to share your experience with them. So the experience you have that tells you like, oh, it's okay, I'm still on the right track, is from having done it 3 or 4 or 15 times. They haven't done it 3 or 4 or 15 times. So they don't know that that website takes a long time to load or that you have to re-enter that piece 3 or 4 times. They don't know that. So you're basically giving them the benefit of your learning such that when they go through it, they'll have that extra benefit. They're starting not from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful for them in that way. Then, okay, so now we've written everything and we're going to test.
Well, we've written not everything. We want to test each section as we create it. So for all the coders out there, that'll be unit testing. It's my bit of coding knowledge for now. I was looking for the definition of unit testing and I saw a cartoon and it said, the more code you write without testing, the more paths you have to check for errors, which I quite liked. Like the more you write, the more often there's going to be a series of errors rather than just one.
Right.
So you test each section to make sure it works before you write a lot of stuff in the wrong direction. And actually testing each section teaches you about the users and what they need in terms of level of information and context so that you write the next parts more efficiently.
Right. So we haven't written everything. We're just in the process and we recommend 4 levels of testing as you're going along. The first is follow your own checklist. So go through the checklist starting at the very beginning until you can get through the whole section without adding or changing anything. If you can, you might even set yourself up as a new user so you don't have any of the privileges that make things easier for you. Don't try and like think it through. Just actually do it. There's a big difference in outcome. Step 2 is watch other users go through your checklist. Again, do this multiple times until they can get through a whole section without adding or changing anything. You want to watch them, not just have them go through and report back. Because seeing them use the checklist means that you see problems or clarifications that they may not report. If it takes them a second or two to get through a piece of it, it's because they have questions. So if you can see them have those moments where they're going, I don't know what I'm looking for, then you'll be able to add maybe a bullet or a comment or something like that. It would also work too if you could screen share remotely. You could also do a FaceTime call, right? You can do a FaceTime call where you're looking at the computer. Obviously, though, you could use like Zoom or any of the stuff we're all using this year.
Yeah, but if there's a reason you can't screen share and you need to watch someone with the keyboard and the screen, you can use something like FaceTime to watch.
Oh, I got
them.
It.
And then use, you and I did this. What did we have? We had FaceTime, Skype, and Zoom running because we were doing Zoom testing. Sometimes it's
remember to mute all the audio except one, y'all, when you're doing that, because otherwise you're just in a cave of your friendship. Okay, so 3, watch the users go through the checklist with dummy clients. Almost every checklist has the users interacting with someone else. So find another team member or a colleague to play those other people, those outside people. If the checklist, for example, has the user sending an email to open account, have someone reply to that email. When we say dummy here, we don't mean pretend or non-existent. We really just want to have someone playing the client who doesn't know what the checklist is all about. So someone who's, you know, just external to the process.
Yeah. We often use parents in part because they're available and also in part because they have no clue what we're doing. And so if we send them an email from the system and they understand it and do what we wanted, we're like, okay, that's working.
I have a similar person that I use for testing, but I won't throw them under the bus. <Bless. laughs> I won't throw them under the bus. 4 is to watch users go through the process the first few times they use it for real. So be there to troubleshoot and update the checklist if there's any changes. Do this for each user if you can. Everyone will have hiccups at different places. So you'll find different sticking points for each person using it. So you want to watch them go through that that process the first few times with a few people.
Until they say, I don't need you.
Right.
And your checklist will not survive in the real world if you don't test or you don't do enough testing. You have to keep testing until users have used the checklist multiple times and they don't need you at all. So not only have you got to be confident that they can get through without you, they have to be confident too. And sometimes that takes a few extra go-rounds for them to be confident because they haven't done it before. Just because you can see that they're doing it all right doesn't mean they feel confident. So it probably means a couple of extra times than after you think it's okay. But it really, unless your users are being clingy, for want of a better word, most people will just take a couple of extra times and then they'll say, no, it's all right, I'm fine, as long as you're on the phone or as long as I can call you. And then they won't call you because they'll be fine.
Good. So now we're at the point where we review and change. You're going to want to review your checklist regularly. Checklists are only useful if they're up to date and accurate. If the person normally using it is hit by the proverbial bus, any person trying to pick up the work has to be able to follow the checklist. So keep in mind that as things change, that checklist will need to change. For the checklist to stand on its own, there can't be any of those comments kind of like, well, it says that, but that's what we used to do, and now we do it differently, right? It's got to be up with the times. Ask users to send you feedback every time they use the checklist. Receive that feedback without criticism. It's not about you. It's about them not understanding. So just try to make it so that they do understand. Many times the changes are insignificant even, and they won't seem necessary or make sense. But if you're hoping for a lot of people to use this, it doesn't matter. If you're short or dismissive, they won't give you the feedback, and all that work that you did to make the checklist will be wasted because you spent all that time and now it's not useful to people. It won't save you any time in the long run if you don't put a lot of time into it now.
And a lot of those times, the changes that you think are insignificant matter to someone else. Someone says, please, can you highlight the first task in every section? Does it make a difference one way or the other to you? Do you think it's necessary? No. Will it make that person more self-sufficient and more confident in the checklist? Yes. So do it.
Yeah, good. How often you need to do this, like the review, it depends on your op tempo. It's almost certainly going to be, though, twice as often as you want it to be. So you're like, oh, it's going to be once a year. No, it's going to be four times a year. So don't let it die, though, from inattention. Like, it's like a bad houseplant that you don't water.
Yes. That would be sad after this much work.
Yeah, that would be really sad.
Checklists are incredibly helpful methods of increasing effectiveness and efficiency into your work. But they're difficult and time-consuming to set up. You'll reap the rewards every time you use one. You'll be so happy. It's like a new shortcut. And you think, oh, every time I use /S and it writes my name, best regards, Wendy.
Yes.
I love it every single time. And it took a couple of minutes probably to set it up. But that's the kind of thing. You get a reward every time. A little bit of an adrenaline rush. And hopefully we've been detailed enough that we've made it less onerous on you to create a checklist.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with something new.